This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. The U.S. Coast Guard has given the Lower Kuskokwim School District until the end of the month to remove the diesel fuel from its Napakiak School fuel tanks. The tanks hold about 36,000 gallons of oil and are sitting less than 100 feet from the eroding Kuskokwim riverbank. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports that both the Coast Guard and school district are confident they can meet the deadline.
Lieutenant James Nunez oversees oil spill response for the U.S. Coast Guard in western Alaska. Last week, while reading the news, he came across an article that caught his eye. It described the Kuskokwim River flowing dangerously close to Napakiak School fuel tanks.
And I realized that one wasn't quite on our radar, so we dispatched a duty team to go do an investigation.
The team arrived in Napakiak that week and measured 76 feet from the eroding riverbank to the nearest fuel tank. The next day, the Coast Guard issued an administrative order. The Lower Kuskokwim School District must remove the fuel from the tanks by August 30th.
There's a lot at risk here, should there be a big spill of this 36,000 gallons of oil. We take protection of the environment very serious.
The Coast Guard chose the deadline after consulting with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Geological Survey. Fall storms are approaching, which could cause more erosion, and afterwards, winter ice could block shipments of necessary equipment needed to transfer the fuel.
2 weeks should be enough time to hopefully get this situation mitigated. But then if not, we're prepared to step in with our own emergency response contractors to deal with the issue.
If the Coast Guard did step in, then LKSD could receive a bill for that work. LKSD originally planned to transfer the fuel in March of next year. But LKSD Superintendent Dan Walker says in an email to KYUK that the district should be able to meet the August 30 deadline. He says that the same day the Coast Guard issued its administrative order, the school district started moving. It issued a request for proposal for a contractor to transfer the fuel and set up temporary fuel tanks. Once in place, the temporary tanks will sit in the Napakiak School parking lot until a longer-term location can be found. Lieutenant Nunez says the Coast Guard has been communicating daily with LKSD since he first became aware of Napakiak's situation. He will be sending a Coast Guard officer out to monitor the school district's progress and provide assistance. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And in City Council news, over the past term, two sides have clearly formed in the Bethel City Council. And after several rounds of ethics complaints council members filed against each other, the division has grown. KYUK's Gray Kim sat down with two of the most vocal council members to talk about a dispute that surfaced at Tuesday's meeting, an issue the council plans to take another look at.
Last Tuesday, council members disagreed on whether the city should pay for a lighting project on Pinky's Park Boardwalk. One member, Fritz Charles, was absent during much of that discussion. When he arrived, fellow council member Leif Albertson noticed something.
When he came in, the chair of the meeting, Vice Mayor Williams, immediately started writing notes to him.
Vice Mayor Thor Williams says council members pass notes to each other all the time.
It's a non-issue. I don't see why it's an issue.
Albertson agrees. He texts other members too. But he said this time it seemed different.
After they were passing those notes back and forth, the first thing that Mr. Charles asked was basically the same line of questioning that our vice mayor was asking.
When it came time to vote, Charles sided with Williams. Albertson says this is part of a broader trend.
I can predict how these people are going to vote because of how this other person's going to vote. You know, it's like caucuses. And anyone who's listening, I mean, I think kind of sees that 3-4 vote on a lot of things.
Vice Mayor Williams says the factional voting goes both ways. He saw Councilmember Mitchell Forbes side with Albertson against a project Williams described as a no-brainer.
The vote concerning the lighting on Pinky's Park is once again an example of our fellow council members not wanting to reach across aisles.
Both sides gave reasons for their voting. Albertson said if the city was going to pay for the lights, they should follow the normal budgeting process. Williams said $156,000 just isn't that much if it improves public safety. But both agreed partisan voting affected decision-making. So how did factions, the majority and the minority, forces that govern state and federal politics creep into City Hall? Williams says the media is partly to blame.
A lot of council members speak to their constituents through the radio.
Williams says this leads to grandstanding, speaking to the choir.
We don't have people talking to each other. We have people talking through each other.
Both council members agree. The divide has hindered the council's ability to work for the residents. And they agree on one more point. The solution is coming up in October.
If you don't like what's going on council, your best opportunity to change that is to become a candidate.
Sign up. Put your money where your mouth is.
City council candidacy packets are due today. In Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
Mayor Fred Watson called a special meeting Monday for a revote on the lighting projects. Council approved the agreement with ONC that will use tribal transportation funds to build part of the lighting on Pinkies Park Boardwalk. Council also introduced an ordinance to use city funds to extend the project further. The city-funded lighting project will be put to a vote at the next regular council meeting. And it isn't every day that a 50-year-old message in a bottle washes up on the shores of Western Alaska, but that's exactly what happened to Tyler Ivanoff near Shishmaref this month. KNOM's Emily Hofstetter has more on the story of how technology and the currents of the Bering Strait connected two men in Russia and Alaska.
I was just gathering firewood. Everybody was kind of picking berries, and I just happened to stumble across the bottle, and I noticed it had a... It was a green bottle and had a kind of a cork top, not really cork, but it was a tight top. And I could see inside of the bottle there was like a note.
Ivanoff found two pieces of paper inside.
My kids were pretty excited. They were wondering if it was a pirate's note or treasure.
But the find didn't reveal a map leading to buried Spanish galleons or the Fountain of Youth. The first piece of paper was blank, protecting a handwritten note on the second one.
Second paper had, like, Russian writing. I noticed it because I took a Russian class in college and in high school.
The writing was almost perfectly preserved when Ivanoff opened it. So he could make out the letters, but the translation was a bit beyond his ability. Last Monday, he shared his discovery on his personal social media page. In 2019, internet posts travel a bit faster than bottles through the ocean, so in 3 days, it had over 1,000 shares. Russian speakers got a hold of the post on multiple social media platforms and have translated the message in the bottle to be a greeting from the Russian Navy, dating back to the year 1969. It has an address and a request for a response from whomever finds it. Soon it caught the attention of Russia One, the state-owned Russian media network, whose reporters tracked down the letter writer himself, Captain Anatoly Botsinenko. Last week, they visited Botsinenko at his home in Crimea to tell him the news and provided KNOM with a rough translation of their conversation.
It looks like my handwriting. Really? Looks like, but I'm not sure. Wait. For sure. East Industry Fishing Fleet. EIFF. Yes, I always wrote like that.
In the news report, a reporter holds up his phone to show the elderly captain the image of Ivanoff's find. The man begins to tear up when he recognizes his words from decades ago. The message that washed up near Shishmaref says it was sent from the Suluk, a ship whose construction Botsinenko told reporters he oversaw in 1966 and sailed on until 1970. Tyler Ivanoff isn't sure if he'll answer the request to send a letter back, but it has given him some inspiration to keep the non-traditional method of communication going.
But that's something that I could probably do with my kids in the future. Just send a message in a bottle out there, see where it goes.
With contributed reporting and translation from Pavel Melnik of Russia One, reporting in Nome, I'm Emily Hofstetter.
This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for Yukton News coming up.